Well, good morning and welcome to Launchpad Radio. I am your host, Mr. Kobe Dumas. And today, man, we got a great, great show planned today. And, man, got the applause coming in. I'm in here by myself this morning. So, you know, this is Launchpad Radio, AM 1620. We are sponsored by Global Executive Media. And that is, you can check them out at www.globalexecutivemedia.com. And if you're looking for publishing, branding, marketing, design, a great group of people to work with, somebody to be with you from the start of your project to the end of your project and getting the results that you want to check them out. globalexecutivemedia.com. I am your personal GPS, Mr. Kobe Dumas, and today we got a great show planned for you. And you know, we're going to talk you know, you guys always know I talk about journeys on this show. I like to help people get to, you know, a point to where they are making their own decisions and they're learning how to navigate in life through the challenges, through the strife, the turmoil. And you know, you're going to have good times off. So let's start off with the regular that I always start off with today. But we're going to start off the show today with some great quotes. Too many of us are not living our dreams because we are living our fears. That's by the most incredible Les Brown. Now, if you guys don't know who Les Brown is, he's an incredible speaker, incredible journey, his life. And he has a powerful story and he's a great motivator. So Les Brown, check him out. Don't race through life. Pace every moment with purpose. Pause regularly to lace the love of family and friends and leave a mark that generations after you can trace to the top. I like that. That's by a guy from Ghana, and he's a branding artist in Ghana. His name's Bernard Kelvin Clive. And the next one is, a national festival is an occasion to refine and rebuild the national character. I'm going to read it again. A national festival is an occasion to refine and rebuild the national character. That's by Narendra Modi. And she is a politician also from Africa. Speaking of festivals, I got a great guest planned on with you guys today. You know, imagine having a festival where you got over 30 different countries and nationalities celebrating arts, music, vendors, DJs, live performances, dance, you know, a children's village is there, a tribute to music legends. And, you know, some international guest artists from around the world will show up and, you know, special guests like Amara. You know, you guys are going to, you know, if you don't know who Amara is, Amara La Negra from Love & Hip Hop Miami, she's going to be there more. We're going to talk about that, that festival that brings so many people. But I'm going to do you one better than that. I have the creator, the owner, the sponsor, the mind behind it, Mr. Sylvain. And I'm not going to say the rest of your name, Mr. Sylvain, if you're on with us. Can you hear me, Mr. Sylvain?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you're on with us. I'm not going to say the rest of your name, but I want you to please say your full name for us.
Yeah, so my name is Sylvain Songo.
Sylvain Songo. All right, well, welcome to the show. And I wanted to start off by asking you, you know, I can hear, you're from Africa then. Where are you located? Where are you located now? Are you calling us from Africa right now?
No. I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois, but I am from Africa. I am from Cameroon, which is in Central Africa, very close to Nigeria, like literally next door to Nigeria.
Okay. Oh, great. And how long have you been here in the States with us?
I've been in the U.S. for exactly about 8 years.
Okay, 8 years. Okay, great. So I'm definitely going to want to talk about that journey. So welcome to the show. I'm honored to have you on. I know that you're doing some things with Global Executive Media. Cheryl Wash, our partner. Shout out to Cheryl for doing an amazing job with helping out with your project. And also, man, she's a force with my show. She's executive producer to this show, so she does an amazing job with bringing people like you to my show. So I want to find out a little bit about about you. And obviously, you started in Africa. So can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Well, how do I start it? It's just a very long journey. You know, again, I was born in Cameroon, you know, Central Africa, you know, raised in Cameroon, of course. And I started my journey out of the country. You know, I never really thought I'll be out one day. I never seen myself traveling the world. You know, I've been to over 16 different countries.
But as a young kid, you didn't see yourself traveling at all?
Yes. Yes. Okay. At first, I didn't. I didn't see myself in that. I never look at that perspective. Like, hey, I'll be traveling worldwide. You know, visiting so many countries, living in so many countries. But then eventually, you know, 2006, I, you know, engaged myself in a very long route, a long journey that took me to Nigeria, where I lived for about 6 months.
Okay.
And I left from Nigeria after 6 months just to make the journey short because, you know, very long adventure. Adventurous, moment that I went through going from Nigeria. Then I went to Benin, which is not too far from Nigeria. It's also West Africa.
Okay.
And then I went into Burkina Faso. From Burkina Faso, I went to Mali, which is, you know, where I actually stayed for a little longer. I stayed in Mali for 4 years. And I was teaching French and English out there. So I'm a French teacher of a profession. So I stayed in Mali for, you know, good amount of time, 4 years. And then Mali, I went to Senegal, been to Senegal, and traveling back and forth in the whole region until I eventually met my wife in Mali.
Now you're talking, this travel is when you were maybe a young adult? Is this when you were a young adult, you were traveling?
Yes, I was, and originally I was traveling just to, you know, for a better life, like a lot of people in Africa do. You know, you leave your homes, you're like, hey, you know what, I have some dreams, and I want to, you know, I want to fulfill these dreams.
Okay, see, let's stop right there. I want to rewind back a little bit, because I like to try to delve into, it's important, and at least to me it's important, because it really paints a picture of where you are right now. Like with the things that you're doing some amazing things right now. So I want to find out how those things started clicking as a youngster. So when you were young, let's say living with your parents, how was that lifestyle?
Well, I grew up in a, you know, middle class family. You know, pretty much, you know, I wouldn't say that I lacked a lot. You know, I had the necessary, you know, the necessary I needed, you know, basic stuff that I needed, and had a supporting family, you know.
Right.
For
okay.
The most part. But then, you know, sometime in life, you know, I've always been that big dreamer. You know, I've always been that person who wants beyond what, you know, I don't like being comfortable with just staying in one place and just be like, that is
so
the
you,
lifestyle.
So even as a young kid, you always wanted to do something more than what you were seeing?
Always.
Okay,
always.
Got it. And did you get that influence? Was that an influence from anybody around you? Who inspired you like that? Was it a mom? Was your father an entrepreneur? Or who inspired you to think like that? Or did that just come to you naturally?
Well, to be honest with you, I think that's something that's been natural. Because in my family, I'm the only one who kind of like, I'm the youngest, by the way, out of 10. And you know, I am a little, how would I say, I was the only one who, a little, at that point, it was more like rebellious. They were calling me rebellious because I went against the whole, you know, not normal process that everybody was going on. My brother and sister, everybody stayed in, you know, got a good job, and you know, so after education, everybody got a good job and just stayed where they are. So a lot of my family members are still in Cameroon. Some others traveled after, you know. But, you know, I was that one who just didn't want to take that route just like that. You know, I didn't want to make my route that easy. You know,
okay.
I felt like I was I was, you know, born to do something bigger than that.
So let me ask you, do you think you had a normal, regular childhood, or did you have a challenging childhood, or did things come pretty easy for you? How would you explain your childhood?
Well, I would say things didn't come easy. I wouldn't say things came easy. You know, I grew up in a family where, the family that raised me always didn't, they made sure that I have everything I needed. That I would definitely admit that I had, you know, most of the things that I needed, you know, but we also had to work hard. You know, my mom raised me, you know, teaching me that I have to work hard. You know, just in parentheses, I grew up in, you know, a second family, which is, which embraced me when I was little, because my birth mom, you know, she died when I was still a baby. But,
she died when?
When I was still a baby.
Oh, you were still a baby. Okay, so you never knew your birth mom?
No, I never knew my birth mom.
Okay.
And I never knew my birth dad either until I was, 20-something.
Okay.
I went and looked for him and found him. So, but, you know, I never even noticed that that was in my birth mom because, my adoptive mom, you know, she loved me.
They didn't treat you any different than anything else.
Yeah.
Right, that's so awesome. Okay.
Yeah, so it was great, you know, growing up in that environment with a family that loved me and cared for me and took care of me. You know, but eventually, you know, you grow up and you find out silly things, you know, which I did. And I eventually met my dad, my birth dad, eventually years later, you know, he had moved on and had a whole different family.
How did that affect you when you actually met him? How did that go?
Well, I was not very, I knew that, you know, I wanted to just see this person because I never met him. But, you know, to me it was like, he is not somebody, you know, I don't owe him anything special but birthright, you know, like, okay, yeah, thanks.
Right.
Well, you know, right, having me on this earth, but really I've lived all my life with my adoptive mom, and which is my mom, right? Because, you know, she raised me for since baby. So I grew up with them, and, you know, he never came trying to be around anything. So he literally just abandoned. So I was like, okay, well, I just wanted to see who it is, you know. But, you know, it didn't really impact me that much like that. You know, I mean, I just knew that, I just had to work hard, you know, and not be like him, you know, because today I have daughters.
You think the embracement and the loving of the family that took care of you kind of helped you with that emotion of being able to not be really bothered by that?
Yes, totally. Because, because I was loved. I was loved, and I'm still loved up to today. You know, that's my family, you know, all my brothers out. You know, I'm the last in that family. So, you know, I'm actually considered the baby brother, you know, so it's not like they never, like, distinguish that, oh no, he's not our real brother, whatever, you know, it's always been, you know, that's my family.
So yeah.
I grew up with them, and, you know, I know them more than anybody else, so, and they know me all, you know, more than anybody else would know me, so
how about,
know, and they love me. Yes.
Yeah, I love that. So how about your school life growing up? So you grew up, you went through, you did school, how was school life for you in education? How far did you go with education?
Well, I went in education. I have a master's degree in education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through my education, and my family supported me in what I was doing. So they all, you know, contributed. My big brothers, they were working at some point, and they were even assisting and paying for like my school, my education, books and all that, you know. So I was, you know, pretty much covered growing up. That's why I say I didn't really lack anything. Like, you know, I wouldn't sleep a day without eating. Like, you know, well, not like struggling. But But yeah, going that route was just like, okay, you're gonna finish school, you're just gonna start working, and then you're gonna, you know, just be sitting home and just working and become probably, be a big director somewhere in the company or a manager somewhere in the company, and just do that normal life that a lot of people do, which a lot of people aspire to do. But I just always knew that I had a bigger dream. I had something else that, you know.
So something inside of you always knew that wasn't your destiny.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. And so, but did you have any of those types of employments on the way up, or did you just jump into where you are now right from the beginning?
Well, I had some few employments back home in Cameroon before I decided to travel.
Right.
And then eventually, when I decided in 2006, I decided, you know, I want to take another route. I want, you know, and I always had this passion also for music. And I think that's where I really started, with music. I'm an artist myself, so I'm a rapper. I do French rap.
So wait. Wow. So wait. So now we breaking down the barrier, and if you just hearing, go ahead.
I just had a question. So you do French rap. How did you get involved in that?
French rap. I started French rap when I was, you know, still in Cameroon, back home, younger. You know, back in the days, you know, we were just learning. Like, we still believe it was still real hip hop. You know, so I remember those days when we were rapping on like instrumentals. You know, you would take like Dr. Dre's song, Next Episode, and you would just do a rap on the, you know, freestyles and all these. And then I even started doing little breakdance back then, you know, and just doing little breakdance and all that. So I was a little bit into like that environment. And I had a big dream about it too, in terms of like succeeding in music. You know, I strongly believe that I wanted to be something bigger in that career, you know, to showbiz, into that whole environment.
Okay.
And so when I decided to take my route out of the country, because I heard great things about Senegal, which is, I heard great things about Nigeria, because back then, the movie scene, the music scene, they were pretty much advanced. You know, Nigeria has always been a little advanced than a lot of the other countries in Africa in terms of like, you know, entertainment world, you know. I heard great things about Nigeria, and I wanted to try Nigeria. And I also heard some great things about Senegal, which is like further west. And so I said, you know what, let me go and give it a shot. Let me go, you know, because I'm a go-getter. You know what? I was a person, if I dream of something, I want to get up and go and make it happen. You know, I wouldn't sit and wait for it to come to me.
Well, we're going to talk about that drive you have, man. We're going to talk about that and get more into that. But the music's coming in. We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to start diving a little bit more into a lot of these other things that you do. You say you're in the acting, arts.
Wow.
You're doing French rap. I want to peel back this onion and let's find out who Mr. Sylvain is so that we can go ahead and show you who he is today. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio. I'm your host, Kobe Dumas, joined today with Bobby Sanchez, guest host, filling in for Isaac DeSoto, who's out today. And we got guest, Mr. Sylvain Songo, on the line with us. Mr. Sylvain, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, awesome. So when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about your, you know, some of the other things that you do. And you said that you do French rap and acting and things like that. So what took you on those journeys? What comes from your heart to where it takes you on those journeys to where you're doing those things as well?
As a teenager, I originally just liked music. You know, music is something that I've always loved. You know, it's just up to today, I still listen just to all type of music. You know, depending on my mood, but music has always been something very positive. Music has always been like uplifting to me. You know, so growing up, you know, I grew up around that influence of having music around me, hip hop, especially the hip hop culture and the R&B, and then going to like the early 2000s and all that. So it's always been a big influence. And so I embraced it younger. You know, I loved it. I started doing, you know, started music like that. And it was just fun. And then, of course, in the beginning, my family, too, my parents didn't like it, you know, like that. You know, my mom was like, like I mentioned earlier, they didn't really want me to take that type of route. But I always, you know, I loved it so much. And, you know, a lot of times, parents would not believe in that type of world because of what they see on TV. They just think that, you know, the image, that portrait of, you know, artists being just not something good to do for a lot of time. I mean, probably today we embrace it more, you know, we support our kids who want to do music. But back then, you know, the old school ways was like, a lot of times some parents were very against that lifestyle. Like, oh, you want to be doing music, you want to be doing drugs and stuff like that. You know, because of what the, you know, that whole image that was coming on TV, you know, the music industry. And so my mom personally never really wanted me to be a musician. I love music so bad, and I was like, you know, I'm still going to be doing my music, and, you know, with or without you, I will do it.
Right.
And I went ahead and did it. Okay. I'm stubborn. I'm always been like that. So I just
want to say, well, stubborn. I think there's a fine line from stubbornness and knowing what you want or conforming to what other people want you to want.
Yeah. In a good way, basically. So a positive stubbornness.
Right.
So, but basically I went ahead and just stayed stubborn on that route, and I chose the route. And for a little while, for a long time, I didn't have the support of my family in that area, you know, music and all that. So I took my route from there. I was like, you know what, this is my route, and I'm going to go for this route. And that's where I kind of like separated myself a little bit from the family. I went out and just started doing my music and stuff. And, you know, but I knew what I wanted, and I stayed focused on what I was doing. I went through hard times, yes. I'm not going to say no, because it was tough, you know, being away from the family where you were, you know, you were getting full support, and you decide to go, like, live around with friends and just, you know, so you can be able to do what you want to do. A lot of hard times and all that. And then eventually I was able to make, like, my first mixtape, you know, back home.
Oh,
back
wow.
Then. I did a mixtape early 2000. I did a mixtape. I made a video. And that was, like, the beginning of many others. I started doing some few shows and concerts, and eventually my family, they just realized that, you know what, this kid is just
okay. So let's stop here because this is important. Let's stop here. So you had your vision, you knew what you wanted to do, nobody wanted to support what you wanted to do,
but
you did it anyway, and now they've come around to start supporting you. How's that feel?
Yeah, I love the fact that it came back, and, you know, they decided to try and invest a little bit into it and, you know, support as much as they could. But, you know, in the beginning it was like, okay, let's give it a shot. But at the end it was like, it's not really them. Sometimes when it's not your cup of tea, you know, you don't fit in. You don't really know how to make it happen. You know, you don't understand the reality and the different things that you have to do if you want to support.
The passion has to be there.
Yes. I just felt like, you know what, this is not, I just probably better off, you know, working with those who are in the industry, you know, who I can work with, who know what I'm doing, what we're doing, and what it's about, you know, what goes with being an artist. And so back then, I started my entrepreneurship back then, because that mixtape, I produced it through a friend of mine. We were two of us, you know, we did a little duo. And so I produced it. You know, I invested completely, and I produced that mixtape. You know, I invested on the video and everything. So I made the whole first mixtape.
Did you have, like, your own production company? Did you start, like you said, entrepreneurship? Did you start your own production company?
That's when I started having the idea of starting something. But, you know, it couldn't be fully established because, you know, I was still struggling, but I founded my first music label back then. So I at least had the name of our music label, and I had a dream of going with that music label. That's really where I got started with, like, the production aspect of, you know, I was like, you know what, I want to get this music label eventually in the future big, to a point where I can even produce younger talent
and recruit and other many roster other things. To the label.
Yes. So I started my entrepreneurship from that point. And And then I went from there going up to...
Is that where you started to love entrepreneurship? You started there?
Yes, that was my first entrepreneurship, like thinking of, you know, I mean, I couldn't fully get it going because times were hard, but I started it and I put it on the name of, you know, the single and everything because I produced it myself. So I named it after my label. So, you know, I put my label as a producer, you know, because I invested all on it. 100%. So, and then that was the beginning right there, you know, and I started having visions of different things I wanted to do worldwide, and which eventually I will do, you know, in terms of like opening a music recording studio, especially down in Africa, you know, and I have a vision of what I want to do with that studio and how I want to make it and the design and all that, and how I want to, you know, probably even have a radio station.
And how old were you when you were having this thought process, this mindset? How old were you?
I think I was like 17, 18.
Oh,
I was
very young.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that's not normal. That's not normal mindset behavior, thinking of things like that.
That's the thing. That's why I knew that I had to start, that was made to shine. And I had this vision, that I had this dream, and I was like, I'm going to make this happen. Me having the mindset of being a go-getter, like, I will work hard for what I'll have to make happen. You know, if I have a dream, I would go for it, you know. And I was like, I have this, I want to make this happen, and then I want to get music going too. And so those are some of the things that inspired me to leave the country and just take my adventurous route out of the country, which... In the beginning, when I left the country, I didn't know exactly where I was going like that. You know, I had a couple of connections in Nigeria, but, you know, I was just adventuring myself. Like, I'm going out, and whatever happens out there, I'm just going to survive. And, you know, I mean, I'll be guided by God. Whatever happens, I'll just go and engage myself in it and, you know, make my way out there, and, you know, work hard for it. And I went out for it.
All right, so I'm gonna interrupt with some questions from our listeners. I got one. I know you already answered this one, where you said you came over here about 2008. I think you said earlier in our conversation. Is that correct?
No, 2010.
Oh, 2010. You've been here for 8 years. Okay, so you first came over here 2010. What was your vision of America as a small child? Did you think it was a scary place? Or what was your overall thought process of it?
That's a very good question.
Like, what was your experience when you got off the plane and you stepped in American soil?
So there's the thing. To be honest, I grew up believing, you know, one, in the white Jesus, you know, believing that whole concept that a white man is, they are like God and goddess. That's how I was raised, you know, in Africa. That's what people believe in a lot. That, you know, people like give so much. I mean, you know, they are human beings like us, you know, like black people. But I believe in that concept, and that America, you know, is like a white man's country. And, you know, all our envision of America was the type of lifestyle that you see on music videos. And that's why so many people overseas dream to come to America. Because, I mean, when we sit and we watch movies, you see all these downtown nice skyscrapers, nice building. You watch just music videos, you know, Jay-Z, Beyonce, you see all that lifestyle.
Yeah, you want to emulate it. You want to do it.
And all these fancy cars. You know, it's like a dream. Everybody feeling like, man, I dream being like that. I want to go to America. That's the lifestyle. You know, we don't understand that it's a reality of people who are even poorer here than in Africa. But we don't know that, you know. I never knew that. I never expected that. So to me, it was like America was the ultimate place I wanted to go to. You know, I wanted to eventually come to America. So I was like, eventually, I want to go in America, and I believe that when I come to America, it will be new music and be famous.
Okay.
You know, I thought that that's all, because it's, you know, we don't understand the reality. Like, hey, you come here, man. You have to. Leave work, and you're probably not even going to what that dream of music because
oh, yeah.
you know it's not
Because life hits you.
Life's yes, not exactly. easy, man.
You have to take care of life, because life is not going to take any excuses from you. It doesn't care about your dreams.
It's going to throw everything at
right.
you.
Right. It doesn't care about your dreams. You have to be able to manage that. That brings me up to a question from my co-host from social media. You know, see, this is why I love social media and all the things that it brings, because my co-host, even though he's not here, he's still banging me with questions from wherever it is he's at. And his question is, what advice would you give someone trying to balance a hectic personal life along with their career goals?
That's a really good question, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Advice? Hectic personal life is, that's, to me, I think that's just something that some type of way, sometime in our lives we have to go through. You know, hard times is just a reality. Just, you know, if you don't go through hard times, then you're not fully living, you know, life. And I think, that makes it not easy to, you know, fulfill the dreams that you may have. But the thing is, you have to never give up, first thing. Just never giving up on your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is where problems comes in, when you want to stay so focused on your personal life and you actually give up on the other side of it. That's the challenge that I go through a lot, you know, with the company and having a big family, you know, 4 girls that, you know, I have to fully raise, you know, my wife and so on. So we have those challenges all the time, you know, conflict of schedule sometimes with certain things, the meetings and, you know, the company festival and all the things that I'm doing, you know, it's a million things that I'm working on. But my first thing is that you don't want to completely give up on the other side and just focus on one. Then you're going to end up finding yourself 30 years after and you were just working, paying bills. I think it's all about, you know, organizing yourself and say, hey, you know what? I know I have bills to pay, but if I want to, for example, I'm an artist, I want to be an artist, or I want to record an album, right? So I would say, all right, you know what? Let me save some money for probably the next 3 months or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pay my bills, but I'll probably put like 100 aside, and you know, and eventually
like
I'll
savings
make up
account.
The price. Yeah. So it's all about, you know, organizing yourself and planning, you know, and if you have somebody, a significant other who's also supportive, you both can, you'll even make it much easier because this other person can support you when you're probably working on the other side, you know, so it's always a way to make things happen. But the problem is that a lot of times people give up. We get caught up in you know, the normal life problems, you know, and not minimizing any problem because it's a lot. You know, sometimes you go through like family sickness and death and you know, many other problems, bills and all these things that just you get overwhelmed with so much that you don't, you kind of like step away. But yeah, it's okay to step away, but not to give up. You can step in on this, you know, and say, hey, you know what? I'm like maybe going through a lot right now, but let me give it like 3 months, 4 months, and kind of like get away, you know, get myself back on my feet, and then I can focus a little bit on, you know, or add that extra, that dream that I don't want to give up. That's what I've always done, you know, in
right.
my life. Sometimes I get focused, I get back, I get really, you know, caught up in so much going on that I cannot follow up for like two, you know, couple of weeks, a month or two sometimes. And I don't get a lot done because I'm trying to get this taken care of. But then after that, I'm like, you know, I just stay determined and focused, you
well,
know,
since you,
that I want to get there.
Yeah. And since you love acting and things like that, how do you feel about movies like Coming to America and Black Panther and how America depicts how Africa actually is?
I mean, I think those are great movies. They are showing, you know, some of the other the reality. Some of them are really depicting the reality on the other side of the continent. But, you know, to be honest with you, I think that some of the movies like Black Panther is good. It's great. You know, I love the movie. But I just, you know, I think Black Panther is more something that brings in, for example, the American side, you know, for like the Black Americans, you know, the Africans living on this side of the continent, of the ocean, you know, it brings in the fact that, hey, you know what, we can have great things in Africa, you know, that perspective. And we can have all these technologies in Africa and without having to, you know, rely on the Western countries to come in, mm-hmm. you know, to always be the ones leading in technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's a good perspective that it brings in. And I hope that brings
in... Well, that was a good movie, too.
You know, and that brings in a little more self-confidence in our diaspora. You know,
in your
like,
culture,
hey,
your
you
way
know
of
what,
life.
I'm proud. Yes, you know, and that's the thing that's one of the problems that's missing, you know, because a lot of our Africans in the diaspora are not, you know, we're losing that self-pride of who we are originally, of our true cultures. And you know, that's one of the first things that I learned when I came to America.
I have another...
know, after my long journey.
Yeah, I have another question from our guest. Can you recommend any great movie that can educate Black Americans on Africa?
Great movies. I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of movies that make their way up here. But I think there's some great movies that are actually made in Africa, like Nigeria, Ghana. They have a lot of movies nowadays, even South Africa. Remember the movie Sarafina? Sarafina was,
I remember that one.
A good movie showing a little bit about, you know, the struggle that was going on there in Africa. Because it's challenges, you know, we have a reality here with, like, the gun violence and all these things happening in the U.S., you know, in the Black communities a lot more, you know, and Hispanic probably, you know, the colored low class communities. We also have a different reality, you know, which is a problem. It's not a problem in Africa. So, you know, times are a little hard there, but they have a different reality of everything. And sometimes some of those movies that are actually in Africa, made in Africa, you know, they depict a lot more of that reality in Africa. Now, I like the fact that they also, you know, from here, they're trying to bridge that gap, which is very important, you know, mm-hmm. because African-Americans sometimes have a hard time to relate to directly to Africa because they are not, you know, used to that culture like that.
Right. It's a different culture. You know, it's a different environment.
Different
totally different.
Yes.
And that's why it's good to do movies like Black Panther that was made, because it brings in a little bit of that. We're not away from the technology, you know, because I tell you this, in America, you have a phone, you can walk around with internet all day, all year, you know, you can text and call and you can talk for like hours. In my country, you can't do that. You know, you have to go out and buy a unit.
Wow.
You know, like buy a car, you know.
So you got to manage it. You got to make sure that you on social media with a purpose.
Yes,
and you
exactly.
got to plan your time effectively.
You can't, exactly. Yeah, you got to plan it. You can't just be on there spending all
you
day
don't have
and
the
wasting
luxury
your
just
time
there day in, day out.
Yep, wow. And so you have to put like $10, charge your phone so you can talk for probably an hour, maybe, you know, if even an hour. Because, you know,
okay,
that.
See, that's
be
how
hard
it used,
for
that's
us as Americans.
Well,
to
no,
adjust.
No, no, that's how it used to be for us. Because, you know, my wife's a foreigner. My wife is Japanese. So I remember having to buy these cards so I could talk to her whenever she went home. And mm-hmm. we needed to talk. I had to spend a certain amount of money every week. I mean, it was an investment. It was like, you know, 30, 40 bucks a week.
That money adds up.
Yeah. And this and that was adding up back in, like, I don't know, this was the mid 90s. Right at the beginning of the cell phone boom.
The internet, cell phone.
Yeah, yeah, you new millennials, I was here before cell phones. So, but my question to you is that if you could go back in time based on where you are now, is there anything that you would have done differently? Anything that happened that significantly
like
happened to you?
What would you have done better?
Yeah, what would you have done? Not necessarily better, but just differently.
Personally, if I have to think of anything I could have done better, so I wouldn't really find anything I would say I could have done better, because I believe in the fact that everything, you know, happens in God's plans. You know, certain routes I took, for example, that I probably thought I shouldn't have taken, you know, led me to another route, which was much better. You know, for example, I could have said maybe I didn't have to take the route, for example, going to Nigeria and adventuring myself in, like, countries that I didn't know anybody. Because remember when I went to Benin and all these places, I was struggling because I knew nobody out there, you know. And I went through so many hard times, you know. But, yeah, if I have to take that back, then it wouldn't have put me where I am today.
Right, right. Because, oh, yeah. Well, that's what the challenges bring you there. The challenges bring you to where you are. So a lot of people, I think, try to shy away from challenges or shun challenges or want to avoid having any kind of negative things happen on their journey when that's the wrong, in my opinion, that's the wrong mentality, because you need those in order to get the lessons, in order to take you on the journey that you need to be on.
Pain makes you grow, you know.
Right. It's just like having wheels for your car. You have to have the wheels in order to move to get there.
Or else you ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, those challenges and those pains are like the wheels of your car. You need those in order to get to the next level.
They build character, basically.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
and that's why I wouldn't say I would take anything back, because I am very proud of, you know, and the person I am today. You know, and thanks to the challenges that I went through, thanks to because really, if I didn't take that route, again, because I had some moments in my life where I felt like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have took this route, you know. But
don't we all think that all the time? Like constantly?
I do. From time to time,
we all constantly think that. Everybody in their own situation always thinks that the decisions that they made are not the right ones. It's incredible when you think about it.
Yes, that's
you can
true.
Lose your
that's
mind
true.
Thinking about
right.
it.
It's incredible when you think about it, but we're all on a journey, and we just have to embrace the journey that's in front of us and learn how to navigate through it more so than just, you know, letting it beat us around. But I have another question for you, because we're getting ready to get into the second hour, and I really want to get into this Bantu Fest. And some of the things that
yeah,
you're
what's
doing
that
with
about?
That.
I want to hear about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I
want to
get into it, but before we get into it, you have any kids? Are you single? Do you have a wife?
Yes. I have, I've been married for 10 years. It's actually, today is my 20th.
20 years. 10 years. Okay. Wow.
No, 10.
10. 10 year anniversary.
10 year anniversary. Yes, okay. That I've been married. And I have four girls.
Four girls.
Four. Wow.
So only one wife?
Yes.
Okay, because, you know, I always hear, like, you can have multiple wives, you know. I'm just like, okay, what is that like? I don't even know. I can barely deal with the one wife that I have.
Right?
So you throw another wife in there, man, I don't know. I might not make it.
I know, right? I mean, some people do, you know. In Africa, it's not something that doesn't happen. I hear that a lot, you know. Some people, I heard you have been having seven wives and stuff. Yeah, it is true that some people be having seven wives. I know somebody who used to have 75 wives.
Seventy-five.
Yes. And
how do you,
you
manage
know, so,
that?
Man, I don't know.
So yeah, see, I'm over here. I don't even, my mind just went blank, because I don't even have no, I'm like 75. You lost me at like two or three. Right? I can't.
Exactly.
There's no way I can keep up with 75. There's no way. I can't even
How
keep
is
up
that
with
even
one.
Legal?
Yeah. Well, you know, in some cultures, like in Africa, some cultures, it's allowed. It would be funny, really, to find out a lot of things that happen in Africa in culture. You know, when you go into some cultures, you know, literary cultures. You'll find out so many different ways. You know, some cultures where they allow, like for example, the Muslim culture, they allow to have four wives. You know, and that is if you have the money to afford to have four wives. I mean, more likely each wife will have a house. You know, and, you know, they'll make kids. You know, some of them they'll make like at least 7, 8, 9 kids with one wife, and so on, you know, times four. So you're sitting here having like 35 wives, 40, I mean 35 children, 40 kids, you know, with so many wives. And you know, those realities, I mean, you know, people go into these families with so many wives. And then in some other cultures that I've met traveling in all these countries, because like I said earlier, I've been to 16 different countries worldwide. And so I've met some cultures where, you know, like when the husband dies, the wife can marry their brother.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. You know, I've met those type of cultures. Or the son can marry the wife of his dad. You know, if like in a way, it's like a king, you know, king of like a village. And when the dad was a king, dies, his son, when he takes over, he marries all the wives too.
Wow.
Oh,
so
man.
You know, so yeah, that's see, yeah, I'm, yeah, see, I'd be like, hey, dad, hold up. So check this out. So I'm not trying to be managing, you know. Which,
I know, right?
Anyway, man, that's funny. That's a whole nother conversation.
Whole nother dynamic.
Now, how does your wife does she support your journey? I mean, you guys have been together 10 years, so that says a lot already in itself, because in this day and time, it's a challenge to find couples staying together.
Couples
that have common ground.
It's a challenge,
man.
My wife and I are going on 15 years. I tell people we've been married 15 years, and they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, but we've been together for 20. That counts for something, right? But no, we've been together for a while, and people were like, wow, how do you do that? How do you stay thing? I think it's, in my relationship, I think it's maintaining that communication through all challenges and
trust,
doing that.
Loyalty.
What do you think it is?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, like as I said, I did make a little comment this morning, post this morning about, you know, giving a little shout out to my wife. You know, relationship is, it's a very delicate thing, you know, that, you know, we all have to go through at some point in our lives. And it's not easy, you know, because you have your own ways of doing things, of thinking. And now you have to like compromise with somebody else who has sometimes different ways of thinking, you know, because we're never going to perfectly think, you know, like, you know, we might have a lot of common points together, but it's always going to be like one of two little things that we don't agree on. But, you know, but we have to like work together. We have to agree to compromise. And that's a lot of times the problem with relationships, because when people are not willing to be flexible, are not willing to compromise, are not willing to communicate about what is happening and how they can work things out. Because, you know, the number one problem with relationship is communication, like you mentioned.
Communication,
you know,
and trust.
Yes. You have to communicate. If you don't talk about, you know, an issue and express it properly, and then even when you talk about it, you have to be willing to compromise with each other. Because a lot of times, you know, like men will have this ego, which, you know, we do a lot. You know, and I get that a lot with my wife. Sometimes we fight. Sometimes we don't even talk to each other for days. Literally. Sometimes we don't talk to each other for days because, you know, we have, you know, I'll have my little ego, like, I don't want to do it. You know?
Man, I'm trying to learn. My ego is not my amigo. So whenever I see him peeking, I put him up. I put him in a cage somewhere. You better get up somewhere, you know, and leave it at the door and be like, baby, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And that's a problem, because a lot of times, you know, like me, I may not say right away, but after, you know, I sit back, I'm like, okay, you know what, it's a bigger picture here and I shouldn't do this. You know, I think back, I calm down, I think back about it, and I come back and try, you know, I try to work things back out. And,
you see,
know,
I'm going to have to invite you back. I'm going to have to invite you back for the relationship show, because I'm going to have one. Because it's I mean, I want to talk about, I'm serious. I really want to talk about couples in business and being able to have these kind of conversations because it's super important. It's super important communicating between each other when you're doing things. And a lot of times, you know, like I have to find myself a lot of times, you know, for me, the way I think about it, doesn't matter. Any challenges in my relationship, it hurts me no matter what, even if I'm right, even if I'm wrong, doesn't matter, because somebody's upset in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To me, it doesn't really matter. I don't want to press my wife to be right, or I don't want to press her. You know, I definitely don't want to be wrong, but I will be wrong. You know what I mean? But it's just the way you got to think about it. But man, we got to take another break. We're going to get into these commercials, and then we'll get right back into Bantu Fest and all the things that you're doing now, man. So if you're with us, you're just joining us, we have Mr. Sylvain Songo, and he is the creator of the Bantu Fest, 4th anniversary, I believe. And we're going to talk about it when we get back from these brief messages. Launchpad Radio, AM 1620, Eagle Radio Network. Welcome back to Launchpad Radio. I'm your host, Kobe Dumas, joined with Bobby Sanchez.
Yo, yo.
Guest hosting in for Isaac DeSoto. And we got on the line with us Mr. Sylvain Songo.
Songo.
Yes.
That's Songo.
Yes.
So I want to make sure I say that right. So, man, I want to get into this Bantu Fest. You've created a festival. And let's just let you introduce it in your own words, and then I'm just gonna bring my questions.
Is it to promote the African culture here in America, or?
Yes. So Bantu Fest, first of all, it's a free festival. You know, that was founded by the company that I founded here in the U.S., which is called Bantu Entertainment.
Okay, so, and so you said it's a free festival. I just want to make that clear.
Yes, it's a free festival. And so, you know, Bantu Entertainment is behind the festival, I mean, which is my company that I founded here in the U.S. And so the festival is a cultural festival. It's a multicultural festival. So we bring in cultures from over 20 different countries, and we will bring in food from over 20 different countries as well. So when we're talking about cultures, I mean, we're going to be having talents representing all these, you know, different countries worldwide. And when I'm talking about worldwide, I'm talking about countries like from Africa, you know, Nigeria, South Africa. We're talking about the islands, the Caribbean, you know, Jamaica and all around, you know, Belize, Haiti. We're talking about coming all the way to Southern America, you know, in all Latin America, you know, so we're talking about Brazil, Mexico, and all these countries, and then, of course, the U.S. So this festival brings in all these cultures together to celebrate diversity, you know, love, unity, and peace, you know, and then, of course, to promote the cultures worldwide. We're trying to bridge the gap between all these nations, like, hey, you know what? How about you come and learn a little bit about this other culture? You know, you probably may be born in America, but you can learn about Jamaican culture in terms of, like, the food you can have. That's part of your culture, you know, the Jamaican food. Have, like, a Jamaican music, you know, band, reggae, you know. You're enjoying that culture, you know. We have, like, South African food, you know, Haitian food and all this. So it's going to be, like, very diverse, different activities going on throughout the day, and it's free for, you know, it's a free community event.
Right, so it's a free event. So how do you put together a free event like that? Do you have sponsors that help you out with the event, or how do you guys do that? Because this is pretty, I believe this is pretty big in Chicago, and this is your fourth annual, correct? This is, you've done this 4 years in a row?
Oh, wow, congrats.
Yes, so this is the fourth annual event. This is the fourth time we're doing it, the fourth year. Anniversary of the festival, and this year we're expecting 40,000 people at the festival.
Oh wow!
You know, 40,000 expected. Yeah, because you got a pretty big high attractor too. Miss Amara La Negra is going to be there.
Yes. So for this year, we're bringing in Amara La Negra, who is like originally, she's a Latin, Afro Latino. And she's originally from Dominican Republic. And so, you know, of course, like you mentioned in the intro, she got a little more popular from Love and Hip Hop Miami. But before that, she's been doing music. She has a whole bunch of music that you can find on YouTube. You know, she has quite a good singles that she's made and different featuring. So she's been doing music for a long time.
Oh, we're gonna have to. We're definitely gonna have to not only just get her out, man. I might want to have her come on to the show. Yeah. Bless it, man. Come on in.
Most definitely.
We talk to her too. Yeah. We talk to everybody, man, because her journey sounds incredible. I like it. I read a little bit about her, about how she really, you know, she's Latina, but she's, you know, she'll sport the Afro, everything,
embracing
her heritage.
African,
I mean, it's awesome. I like who she is.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why she's like a perfect fit for the festival, because of the fact that she promotes, you know, her Afro cultures. That, hey, Latino is not just the light ones that you see all the time. You know, you also have some Black Latinos, you know, and she promotes that culture. And she's proud to wear it. And, you know, and a lot of times she wears Afro as well. And shows, you know, like really proud to be who she is, embodied her body, herself, you know, and like, hey, you gotta be, you know, you gotta be proud of who you are and not wait on somebody, you know, just not wait on somebody to tell you who you are or trying to go based on the judgment of others. You know, just be proud of who you are and embrace yourself.
Oh, I love that.
And that's what that's really a great asset for the festival as well. So.
My co-host on the go, Mr. Isaac DeSoto, has another question, man. He says, in a time where there is so much racial division and social disconnect over politics, how hard was it for you to put together such a culturally inclusive festival, and what were some of the obstacles you faced? Great question, Isaac.
To be honest with you, I've been in the States for 8 years, and before I started doing BentoFest. So when I got here in the U.S., I was lucky to live in the south side of Chicago, which is considered dangerous, you know.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I got people who live there, and I've never heard them say that phrase.
Yeah, never. I mean, because that's what I say
I've
all the time.
I've heard it's pretty
hood. The media always portrays the south side of Chicago as, you know, the worst neighborhoods. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, it is more violence probably activities and stuff in our neighborhood, of course, due to, you know, the
poverty. I've just never heard anybody say, I'm glad that I've landed in the south side of Chicago where I did. I've never heard that phrase ever. This is a first.
Yeah, hey, I'm glad. To be honest with you, I'm glad I did, because not just that I landed here and I embraced the community, you know, immediately, because I saw the reality by myself. Like, I actually saw it. You know, a lot of fellow Africans and even, like, so I have a lot of friends who live in Chicago, you know, like Haitians from the island and Africans, a lot more Africans, but they were living in the south side of Chicago, you know, around like the white neighborhoods and stuff like that. They don't want to come to the south side. I actually have friends who literally told me, I don't want to come to the south side. I don't want to get shot, you know, and they're here in the city of Chicago, you know. And so I'm like, I've been living here for 8 years. I mean, I didn't get shot here. I never even get shot at, you know, but.
Because you're probably not doing nothing that warrants somebody to shoot you. I'm just saying. Right?
Yeah, but you know, the reality,
you're not getting involved with the wrong people.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not
exactly
hanging in those areas.
You're being you're doing your thing. You're not worried about what
I think as long as you're cautious of your surroundings and you watch what you do, where you go, and you're not hanging around with a bad element, then the chances of you being shot or having those things happen to you
what they tell me, I mean, if you're looking for trouble, you're going to find it, but obviously you're not looking for it.
But that's not the takeaway. Exactly. Yeah, but that's not the takeaway from the accidental stuff that happens
people
have lost their lives. Not the takeaway
if you think about it, right, this is what I always tell people, because I get that a lot. People are like, I don't know how you guys do to live in the south side. I'm like, well, hey, the accidents can happen everywhere. You can be unsafe anywhere. You can be downtown Chicago or downtown LA, and we've seen these explosions. People are in the stadium and it's a whole explosion. We see people in church praying. Somebody walks in and shoots everybody. But if you're going to get got by something, it's going to come to you wherever you are. You just drive in your car, you get in your car, you're driving quiet in your lane. The drunk guy comes down and runs in a red light, and then your life is gone. You know, and so that's my thing. If we're going to be running away from things because, oh, I don't want to be shot, I mean, as long as you stay in your lane and do what you're supposed to do, I think if your time is not your time, it's not your time.
That's what they always tell me.
Yeah, so that's my philosophy. I'm like, hey, I don't need to live away from. Yeah, because I'll tell you guys this, okay? So I had a good friend of mine who was from Ghana. About 3 or 4 years ago, he got shot in the north side of Chicago in his safe neighborhood.
In the north side of Chicago.
North side.
Yes.
Yeah, now that's where my boy that don't live in the south side live at, in the north side. Shout out to Mr. Corey. What's up, boss?
What's up, Corey?
Yeah, and so this friend of mine came to the south side to see me the night before. And when he was arriving, he asked me for the destination. He called me and said, hey, man, I forgot your street address. Can you give me again your street address? I don't want to end up in the wrong neighborhood and get shot. I'm like, well, and I made sure I directed him. He came over, we hung out, you know, had some pizza, and, you know, listened to some music, some beats and stuff. So we're like, oh, we're going to do some recording on this song. And then he left that night. And the next morning at noon, broad daylight, noon, he got shot in the head. He wasn't in the gang or nothing. He was literally hanging out with a girl, which he thought it was
wrong
a girl.
Wrong place, you know, at the wrong time.
Yes, wrong place, wrong time. And so that's my thing. That's why I say, you know, when people run away from that reality, it is the true reality. And that's why I say, hey, I'm proud to be in the South Bay, because I learned a lot. It really changed my perspective, the way I see things. You know, coming here, I was brainwashed about the reality, about the truth. I would have been in the North Side just being like, Americans, just black Americans are crazy. They're just killing themselves like rats and peas. You know, just like a lot of people think that black Americans are just stupid. I mean, it's true that the violence is really stupid too, because we do it. But also we have to, when you live in the neighborhood, you live here, you understand why it happens.
But and then there's also a good element like yourself there too as well that nobody really, the media doesn't really talk about.
Media will always portray them, the negative aspect of everything.
The negative
society
aspect.
Always.
Yes, which the media actually told me here once. You know, I remember asking to a media truck driver, you know, like the media trucks that come out on the scenes and film. And I asked him, I said, hey, so how can we get you? I think it was CBS. I was like, hey, how can we get you guys to come and film? We're doing a positive event, because I used to do an event called Africa Night. So it was like a cultural night. That's really where we started doing like a community event before we even got into Bantu Fest. And so I remember asking him, like, we do this cultural event and it's, you know, it's for the community and it's, you know, really promoting cultures. How can we get the news, you guys to come and do like a little coverage? And he was like, to be honest with you, if it's not like a shooting or something really bad that happened, we're not going to come. He literally told me that straight up. And I was like, oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because they're so quick to come out when it's like a very terrible accident. When it's literally, you see them. They come out, they rush and come and take pictures and stuff and make, you know, reports. Or when it's a shooting or a fire or whatever, something that's terrible. But whenever you do like something positive like this, you will send them press releases and everything, and they will not come and you know, unless it becomes like a very big event that they feel like, okay, you know, by us covering this, it's good for us. But really, a lot of times you do positive things in the community, you can go and feed some poor people in the street and call them to come and film it, they're not going to come out. They're not. They're really not. You know, and I don't know how to explain that, but I just feel like that's
But see, that's why, that's another one of the, you know, like, I think social media is a double-edged sword, but one of the good parts of it is that we can become our own journalists and we can report our own good, and I see a lot of that.
And we're not restricted by it, like,
yeah, we're not restricted, you know, by, you know,
major media networks.
Absolutely. And so for me, I think that we empower ourselves to start doing like what you're doing already. You're putting on a festival. It's getting
promoting
lots
culture,
of attention. You know, we
buzz.
Got a hold of it. I think you are you planning on doing that out here on the West Coast as well?
California.
Yes, I am. So basically, the festival is getting so big because, you know, I know you, before I answer that question, so I'm coming back a little bit because you did ask me the challenges. And so I was responding in that, going in the route. To be honest with you, you know, being the South Side, the challenge is sometimes it gets a little hard, like things like media coverage, you don't get those type of things because you are in the South Side and you're not like, you know, it's not like something that they want to cover. Those are some of the little challenges, but honestly, I've got a lot more support from the community. In terms of like supporting the event itself and, you know, coming to the event, we get a lot of people who have been following the event, you know, and that's a great thing. Now, going back to the question, which was if we spend, you know, yes, we are planning to expand the festival, which we have some great connections out there in LA. Jane Watson and Jane Watson Associates. So we have some very great connections out there with her.
Shout out to Jane. You said Jane. Say the name again.
Say your last
Jane
name.
Watson.
Jane Watson. Jane Watson, shout out.
Yeah, she's great. She's great.
Yes,
and,
she is.
We are planning to expand the festival to LA, you know, next year. After this year's edition, so next year we'll be doing like a Chicago. We're going to keep Chicago as the hub because this is where we started. You know, you have to stay true to, you know, loyal to who you started with. But then, next year we're going to get things started out there as well. So we're going to do a Chicago edition of Bantufest and then do an LA edition of Bantufest. And if everything goes continuing, we're
going to just continue branching out to other cities.
Yeah, like Atlanta, New York, and Miami.
I don't see why not, because of all these other festivals that I see that goes on out here. And I'm not going to say any names or bash anybody out there doing things, but there's other festivals out there that may not be as positive as something like this, and they go nationwide.
So exactly.
There's no reason for something like this to be able to grab a hold, because it's positivity. In my opinion, my humble opinion, I think we need more positivity, more caring of each other, more taking care of each other, more lifting each other up, more, taking our shoes off and giving them to somebody that don't have shoes. I think we need more of that, and less of the backbiting and I look at the situations we have out here in our city where we're dealing with the homeless problem, and they're kicking homeless people out of hotels with nowhere to go, and then they want to put up a shelter in a neighborhood, but the people in the neighborhood don't want the shelter there. And I'm like, well, when are we going to stop and just learn how to embrace each other and help each other?
But I tell you guys one thing is that personally, I think that one of the biggest problems that we have, and which is why really inspired me to, to start the Bantufest, is the disconnect. It's a very big disconnect between people in general, people from the diaspora, people in Africa, people even in the Latino community. It's a big disconnect. And
we're not united, basically what you mean to say.
We are not. And this is one of the reasons why I personally feel like even like the gun violence we have in our city, like in Chicago, Southside, a lot of these kids who are doing the shooting and all that, they don't know better. They are not properly educated. They're not proud. It's a lack of self pride of who they are. How would you think and be happy of yourself if you thinking that, oh, my history started from slavery?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they teach you in school. You start from slavery, and they don't tell you that before you were slave, you were probably the descendant of a king or a queen or, of a royal family. There's nothing for you to be proud of, but, oh, I'm the descendant of a slave and whatever, some slave master raped my mother, whatever, and got her pregnant again. We came out like this mixed or whatever, and so on. So there's no pride in who we are, and that's one of the reasons why we're bringing these cultures, which is our motto, bringing cultures together. We want to bring these cultures together and make people understand that we are connected.
How?
You may be from Mexico. You may be from Mexico. I may be from
my
Canada.
My family's from Mexico.
Connected,
How? Yeah, how much do you think social media affects the connect or disconnect of, people and relationships in general? Do you think it has a negative impact on how people behave with each other?
Well, I think social media is a sword, and it's also a very soft and comfortable cushion at the same time. So it's both dangerous and, advancing. So it's an advantage for us, to have social media. It depends on how we're using it. It's really the problem, because you can go on social media and just look at video, which a lot of these kids nowadays, they go on social media, they look at fights, and they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
there's a lot of negativity on
it. People fighting. They're happy to look at girls twerking. But, you can use social media, for example, which is what we're doing. We're using social media to promote what we're doing, the cultural experience that we're promoting. Like Bantufest right now on Facebook, we have about 11,000 people who are following Bantufest just on Facebook. And that's just one platform among many other platforms that we have going on. So you can use something like that, because all these people are like, oh, this is great, I love this. And we're bringing to people something to be proud of. A lot of people were born here in the U.S. Like, you may be born in the U.S. and your parents are from Mexico.
I know.
But sometimes you haven't you haven't probably been yourself there. You're not supposed to go to some Mexicans who told me, oh, you know, I've never been there myself. I'm like, so what are you waiting to go? You know, but this time we're bringing you some of that culture here. We're bringing an event where you can see how we are all connected. You know, sometimes they talk about this challenge between Mexican and Puerto Rican. They're talking about a challenge about African and African-American, that we don't get along. Yes, but a lot, you're going to find out that we are all connected. You know, during the African night we were doing, I learned a lot in terms of these countries. I went in, like, Mexican culture, some of the Mexican cultural villages and, you know, practices that they were doing, And a lot of them are actually influenced from the African culture. I found that a lot of that, like, I was like, wow, this is like the same type of music. I found some music, like Senegalese type of music, that were played in Belize. And these are like the Belizeans who are like Hispanic type of Belizean. And then you find out some of that traditional music is like literally the same type of music we have in Africa. I'm like, we are all connected.
Right, you know, absolutely.
So we're all one. At the
end of the day, it truly is true that we are all connected. And that's why a lot of the times when the differences to me, you know, of course there's going to be differences. People learn things and they have different environments.
The differences are petty. Yeah, they're
small and they're subtle and they're, you know, particular to certain environments and certain people. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a disconnect.
Yes. And that's why, you know, that's what inspired me to start the festival, because I wanted to do something to educate the youth. I mean, I may not be able to educate, you are in the studio right now because, you know, adults, it's hard to put things in the head when you already have things. You know, a lot of times adults are already set in the mindset, you know. But the younger ones, the next generation, you know, they are the ones we have to teach them, like, hey, there's no need for us to be fighting each other. There's no need for us to be divided because I have a different name, because I'm from another country, because, you know, no.
You got to teach them to embrace each other together and embrace what we have in common, not the different, and to not focus on the differences.
Yes, and this the only, you know, the best way to change the, you know, like our the, you know, our system today is to educate the youth, the next generation. You know, like me, my daughters, I want to teach them, you know, which I am doing, teaching them, you know, to be proud of who they are and embracing, and teach them not to, you know, love and not hate. You know, and so when you teach these people and say, hey, you know what, we all connected, we all related, we all have similarity. You know, like my food, the food that we eat in Africa, I see Mexican food, I'm like, we relate together, we have the same things, they eat plantains, we eat plantains.
Right.
Same
things.
Right.
And so I'm like, we have these similarities. And
a lot of
if
similarities.
If we educate these kids, you know, and make them understand that, hey, you have to embrace this. You have to embrace other, you know, the other cultures. You have to learn about the other cultures so you can be more open.
I got a great story of connection. I mean, when my wife and I started dating, her grandmother, who's in her late 90s right now, she spoke more Spanish than Japanese.
That's
and
cool.
I spoke no Japanese and a little bit of Spanish, right? And so
were able to communicate.
Yeah, so when I went to Japan, I ended up communicating with her grandmother, who used to live in Peru. That's why she picked up Spanish. She spoke fluent Spanish and fluent Japanese, right? So my little broken Spanish allowed her to feel comfortable with me, and I think she was instrumental in at getting the family okay with our relationship. And now, to this day, she doesn't speak to me in Japanese or English. She only talks to me in Spanish, and I'm the only person. It's crazy.
That's a good story, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll show up, and we'll hang out, and the family is like, why is she talking to him in Spanish? Because she doesn't talk to anybody in Spanish except for me. It's crazy.
and you know, I found out that, like, in Jamaica, I love Jamaicans. It's a lot of Chinese who actually are connected with Jamaica. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, so you go to Jamaica and you find out a lot of Chinese, Japanese, where actually came out there and they actually, you know, related.
Very big on the culture. Very big.
Yes. You know, and so, you know, and then you have like the Ethiopian culture out there too. And so on. So, you know, so it's, and this is why we say we're bringing cultures together. This is what Bantu Fest is about.
where they can go to visit if they're in the Chicago area or if they want to travel out there. Also, do you need any interns or volunteers or vendors who want to participate? Where can they find out all of that information?
We have different platforms. We are on Eventbrite. I mean, Eventbrite, we do have about 13,000 people who are with the festival. As we're talking right now, we have a couple of months going. And then, like I said earlier, Facebook, about 11,000 people. So we're rounding about 20-something thousand people right now. So by the time we get to the next couple of months, at least 30,000.
Wow. You had me at 11,000. Yeah. That's a lot of people already. That's incredible. Yes. That's so incredible.
Did you say earlier like 40,000 attend?
Yeah. We have 23,000 people about, roughly.
And right how do you get the word? How do you get the word out to so
do
many
you just
people
promote
to go that? Is that
just
word
social
of mouth
media or?
Last year, a lot of people came out last year already. We had a lot of people who came out last year. We had about 20,000 people last year, and it was hot. The point that you could barely walk. That's how crazy it was. Like at some point, I remember I was trying to walk, and you couldn't even walk. And you would stand on the stage, look down. Can't even see the end of the street because that's how it was. So we're getting a lot of support. A lot of people really loving the festival. Bantu Fest on the, we have a website. We're on Facebook. You just type in Bantu Fest 2018. You can go on. You can even Google us. Just Google Bantu Fest. You find all the links. We are on the City of Chicago's website. Officially one of the neighborhood fest. You can also go on our website at www.bantu entertainment, which is a company behind the festival. Bantu Entertainment, and then the number is 01.com. That's a website, that's an official website of, for the festival. On social media, you can go on Instagram, you can just Google Bantu Fest.
Do you guys
Bantu
have a Facebook page?
Yeah, do what I tell them. Google me, baby. No, just Google Bantu Fest. Bantu Fest. BANTUFEST. I just Googled it. Everything comes up. You can find what you need. So you need volunteer sponsors, interns, everything.
We are definitely open for volunteers to work with the festival, and especially the youth. We want to get a lot more youth so they can come and get experience with the festival. It's a great platform for them to come and just experience the festival and learn, So because we have to pass it down to the youth. We have to pass it down to the next generation. And I'm not trying to be greedy with it.
Right.
Some elders, I want the youth to learn and see how some such a festival can be done by us working, making it happen. We have different ways people can reach us, and it's literally everywhere. I can just say you can find it everywhere you want. If you just Google, you'll find it on prices. We had a lot of press coverage last year as well. Fox TV, we did like a whole live show on Fox TV last year.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yes, so we have all that, which is already out there. So you can just Google and find all these, Chicago Tribune and all these, papers that covered the Bantu Fest last year. So you find us there, you find us on the City of Chicago's website, and then you can always go on our website.
And what type of entertainment company is it? What do you do? You do music or are you doing, print? What are you doing?
Tim and we do a lot of things. We are like a one-stop shop. Graphic design, printing. We do print. We print different things like flyers, all those every material you need, business cards, posters.
Mm-hmm.
We do printing. We do promotions as well, like marketing. We do like street team promotions. We do e-blasts. We do social media promotions. We also do talent management as well. So we do, get local talent that we book sometimes, and even worldwide, because we have some artists that like international jazz artists that we have under our umbrella. So we do booking for talent as well, artists, DJs and all that, dancers. So anything you need, you can always reach out to us. We also do other things like trips to Africa, and then we also have classes like French classes and so on. So it's just a lot of things that we're doing with the company. So it's really like a very, very big platform.
Let me ask you the million-dollar question. Are you an author yet? You have a book yet?
To be honest, not yet. I've thought about writing a book about my life journey. you know, about the things that I went through before I even became who I am today.
I've always
thought about that.
Dude, just through our conversation, I don't know, I probably saw about like 6-7 books.
Yeah,
about 6-7 information. I think I count about 6-7. I don't know, my publicist that's on the line, she might be able to
help out.
Yeah, she might be able to say, Kobe, you're right on point with that. But yeah, I think with your story, I'm seeing a whole bunch of books, man. You got a lot, man.
So, I do have a lot to put out. I literally even had at some point even projects to write out scripts for a movie talking about certain things of this type of journey that I went through, because I probably didn't detail a lot of things, but yes, you know, I've been through a lot to be where I am today, you know, and I worked so hard to be where I am today, and I'm still working. I'm still looking forward to getting this bigger, because today I'm sitting over a Bento Entertainment. I'm sitting over Bento Fest, over Bento Incorporated, which is a non-profit as well, a 501c3. So I have all three companies that I founded, you know, doing a lot of big things, and I have a lot of bigger projects that I'm working on.
These are you don't have any traditional employment. These are your primary sources of income, correct?
Yes, primary. That's I've been working on that. And, you know, and so beside of that, you know, of course, every now and then, just to be honest, I will probably get out and drive Uber every now and then when I have time, you know, if I'm not so busy and too tired after working all day. I have been having like really full days.
Now, I tell people, you can't knock the hustle, man. I know Uber Lyft drivers making $1,500 a week to fund their dreams. So you can't judge a person by that.
Hey, no, of course. Of course not. It's pretty different money every now and then, like on weekends. If I don't have that much going on, I go out and drive a good weekend, you know, and they come out really good.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's my life struggle. That's pretty much what I go through every day. And I stay humble. That's one of my key things. I want to stay humble. I want to stay, you know, always that person that you can always call and talk to. You can always reach. I may get busy. I may not get in touch right away. But, yes, I always try to stay humble with what we're doing. Because what's the point of trying to have ego and get big-headed about what you're doing? You know, I have 40,000 people coming to this festival, so you can talk to me. You got to go talk to my assistant. No, I want you to talk to me so I can personally resolve your issue, you know, do what I can do to work. And it's very important that we do that, because I want to help the community, and that was my vision when I started Bento Fest. I want to work with the community. I want to help the community, because the community needs us, needs people like us. So to get our community better and safer. It's most importantly for the next generation. That's why I founded all these companies, and I want to do a lot of things, including charities and investment, which next year we're expanding Bento Entertainment in Africa. If everything is fine, we're going to be having Bento Entertainment in Africa, in Senegal, and many other countries eventually. We'll have different things. We'll have charities. We'll have for-profit businesses. We'll have different businesses. And then the festival itself will also go out there as well. We have all these ventures that we are expanding overseas, and here in America, of course, like we mentioned earlier, we have all this going on. But all this really inspired me to get, you know, make this dream happen. I want to leave this legacy for the next generation. I want the next generation to sit back and look at this like this is something they can get inspired on and follow the steps that we started.
Man. Well, you're a big inspiration right now. Just listening to you and listening to your journey and what you've gone through and just talking to you. I want to talk to you more. Unfortunately, time is running out, man. They only give us 2 hours at this station before they kick us out of here.
Yeah.
Because I can run my mouth all day. But
it's been great.
Man, it's been amazing. So I do want to ask you, for the kids listening out there, and you say you didn't give me all the challenges that you went through, and you've been through a lot. Goes without saying, a lot of people who do some of the things that, especially some of the great things that you're doing, they do go through a lot, because they have to learn a lot and they have to witness a lot. So you tend to go through a lot through that process in order to get where you're at. So for somebody who's on that journey, somebody who's trying to do big things and make a good life for themselves and maybe get out of the journey that they're on into a better one, or maybe improve the journey that they're on, what are your golden nuggets? What do you suggest to them that they do as far as within their own self? What can they do to make that happen?
Personal advice to the next generation, coming back to the fact that first thing is that you have to dream. It's okay to dream. And you actually dream big. Okay, that's just normal. You have to dream. But what is a dream if you dream without manifesting that dream? Then the dream would just stay a dream.
And so, will manifest into reality.
Yes. So my advice to the next generation is that you have to dream and manifest it. And it's not going to be an easy process.
No.
Never an easy process. But
life's not easy.
Dreaming, yes. But working hard and taking all the beating and the fight and everything, the struggle to make this dream come true, you know, that's the most important part. Because whenever is you're fighting and going through all this hard time, it just reminds you that, you know what, you should be like just reminded that I'm on the right path, because eventually it's going to pay off.
Yes,
you know, and my route wasn't easy, because
eventually you'll find the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, and even when I was here in the U.S., I started my cultural events. It was good, and I even had haters. It's okay to have haters.
Haters, when you have haters, that means you're doing something right.
You know what, Sylvain? You're funny. You're really funny, because you said had. You still have haters.
I still have haters. Yes, I do.
They're still here.
You know, yeah. And guess what? It's okay. It's
absolutely.
That means you're doing something right. That means you're doing something right.
Absolutely it is. Yeah, because you'll never not have haters, period. You'll never not have
haters. If you don't have haters, that means, yeah, if you don't have haters, that means you are not doing something good. I think haters,
you're not doing something
right. You know what? You got to be like, hey, I'm doing something good if I have these people hating. Because obviously, if you're hating, that means you're lower than I am. Because that's the only reason you're going to be hating. You know, that means you feel like I'm better than you are. You know, and so you will not hate something that you are better than. You know, why are you hating? Like, okay, I don't care. You're nobody. But when you see somebody potential, you see the potential. You know, people are going to try to block you off sometimes.
Yeah, it turns out into envy, crabs in a barrel, whatever you want to call it. But,
yeah,
man, we can talk forever. I feel comfortable with our conversation. And
I do
too. You're an incredible guest. You have an incredible journey. I can't wait. I'm sure our paths are going to cross again. I always tell all of my guests, because I would say my good guests, but all of my guests are great. I always have great guests that come on this show. So you're always welcome to come in. You're always welcome to chime in. You're always welcome to coach with us, teach with us. By all means, we definitely want to have you back. And when you come to LA, you're coming in studio, please. Please come in studio with us and get online, and we can do this teaching together right from the platform. I would love that.
That sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So with that, you have any final things that you want to say before I let you go and then do my closing thoughts?
My just final words would be just uplifting message, you know, that I want to put out to all our listeners, and more specifically to the youth, because I really focus a lot on youth, you know, because they, our kids, you know, our younger brothers and sisters, they're the ones who want to take over whatever legacy that we leave.
They're the future. They're going to be the future generations that shape, you know, the future.
Yeah, see, I focus on the youth too, man, because us adults, man, we hard-headed. We don't like listening to each other.
That's what I said. We're setting stones.
We got
man.
Too
it's
much.
Like,
yeah, we don't like listening. We don't like listening to each other. We can be driving to that brick wall at 100 miles an hour, and I can tell you, don't do that. You're gonna crash. You don't want to listen to me anyway. You're gonna do it anyway, just because.
Exactly. That's true. But so, just message to the youth, you know, to the, you know, our listeners, and you know, the younger generation, that dreaming is a good thing. You know, if it is a good thing to be entrepreneur, to not to be set in the lifestyle, you know, of working, for example, a 9-to-5, or because when you work in a 9-to-5, you're pursuing somebody else's dream. It's okay to be, you know, I know a lot of times we feel afraid or scared to change, and which is a problem that we have a lot of times, you know, afraid of change. But change is the only thing that's constant, you know, so things change. We will change. Things will change. We all change by default, from babies to adults. The change is constant.
Constant, yes.
By that's default. The only thing that's constant. Every single thing changes. The tree, you know, the leaves, everything.
You change after you die. Everything changes. It doesn't matter. So,
never at a standstill.
Well,
we shouldn't be scared to change, and we shouldn't be afraid
to embrace
our
it.
Dreams.
Right.
Yes, to embrace our dreams and our vision and our aspiration.
Well,
that's my final word.
Well, incredible story, incredible event. I'm definitely trying to put the pieces together to make it out there to your event. I want to see it firsthand, but I'm definitely going to want to participate in your event when you do get it to come outside out here. That will be awesome to work with you. But hey, man, great conversation. You're an inspiration. I got your advice. Dream and manifest, man. Let's keep it going.
And big shout out to those who, you know, helped really, you know, getting this event going on, because I was at first like, hey, you know what, 2 hours might be too long. I have a lot going on because I am busy a lot with the festival. But Cheryl, I definitely want to say thank you to Cheryl Catherine, you know, who is, I think, one of the producers of the show, also to Jane Watson as well. So I want to thank them for supporting, you know, being like, you know, supporting me into this route that we're working on.
So absolutely. Absolutely, man. And it takes a village, man. It takes a village. And sometimes, sometimes we gotta allow other people to help us see certain things on our journey, man. And, you know, I get that a lot, man. A lot of people go, man, 2 hours is too long, man, for me to be on an interview. But a lot of times, well, if we get into the conversation and get to talking, man, it's a conversation. And 2 hours ain't enough, because I can talk to you for another 2 hours, no props. So, but man,
thank you all so much, we're
glad to have you on, and then we'll definitely have to have you back sometime.
Yeah, we got to have you back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Take care, man.
Okay, no problem. Thanks. You too.
Now, with Sylvain Lamb for the Bantu Fest 4th annual in Chicago. So you guys make sure you Google Bantu Fest, B-A-N-T-U Fest. Go check out the event, support. It's a free event.
You in the area even attend.
Yeah, I mean, bringing a lot of cultures together and doing that. But with that, that's going to bring me to my final thoughts. I absolutely love people's journeys. I absolutely love watching people do things and overcome their challenges or discover who they are or become somebody different than they thought they could be. So, you know, here's my golden nuggets for today. Today, I hereby give you permission to feel exactly how you are feeling without apologizing or stifling or excusing or resisting. I give you permission to drop the politeness and the masks and the sugarcoating and just be real. To stop wasting time justifying and rationalizing and analyzing and just say what you mean and mean what you say.
Exactly.
To accept yourself in all your brave, broken beauty, and to stop trying to pick up all the pieces and glue them back together with good intentions, but to just let your imperfect self shine. I give you permission to take a deep breath and let go of the person you think you should be, and instead celebrate the person that you are.
Embrace yourself.
To drop expectations of yourself and of others, and to just accept each moment as it is, as it comes. I give you permission to just be you, and give you permission to let me just be me. Let's just stop trying to wipe all the cracks and scuff marks and smudges and flaws, and instead look at them as signs of life. A life well lived, and as little medals of honor that life and people and heartache and disappointment and at one point tried to break us. But guess what? We're still here. Right? So let's just be who we really are. Right? Do you agree with that?
I agree 100%.
Right? I think if we all try to just be who we are.
Don't focus on the negative.
Don't focus
Reflect
on the negative.
Reflect on the positive. Put that aside.
Absolutely. And the more you do that, like, a lot of times we're faced with challenges and problems, and I'm not absent from that. I go through it just like everybody else. You know, I have debt problems just like everybody else.
No, we all got problems.
I argue with my wife sometimes. Not today. Hi, baby. Love you. But argue with my wife and my spouse sometimes, just like
That's
everybody
normal,
else.
Though. That's normal.
It's normal. It's absolutely normal. When we start thinking it's abnormal and we stop doing it, that's when it's a problem. It's normal to go through that. Go through the process and solve it. It's important. And our guest today, to me, you know, man, I learned a lot on that call, because from the very beginning, look at the challenges that he went through. His first challenge was he lost his mom at a very young age. He doesn't even remember his biological mother. He was blessed but and fortunate enough.
He had a supportive family.
Absolutely fortunate enough to be adopted and blessed with a family that took care of him. But how about those that aren't out, that are out there that aren't that lucky?
There's a lot of those out there too. Right. A lot of people out there that they don't have that kind of blessing.
But I think, you know, the moral is come together, learn, help each other. Look at what he's creating out of his journey, a Bantu Fest, fourth generation cultural fest that brings thousands and thousands of people together.
From all different cultures. Coming together, learning about each That's other, embracing legacy. Each yeah. other.
He could stop right now. That's a legacy in itself, right?
Oh, yeah.
He ain't going to stop, though.
Oh, no. He's going to keep going.
Right. Absolutely not. And the more we embrace situations and people and things like that, the better we become. The better we become as people, the better we become as a nation, the better we just begin to support each other. I love everybody. Even if you hate me, I love you. I forgive you already. It doesn't matter. You know, my body language might say different, but still, I ain't thinking about you. So anyway, check this out. Launchpad Radio, AM 1620 here every Thursday, 9 to 11. Come join us. A lot of times we have a call-in guest, so it's hard. We're doing the call-ins right now. We're just filling up the environment with good, positive energy, great information, great lessons, just a great time for 2 hours when you come. So when you come, you're definitely going to have fun here. We like to have fun. We definitely like to learn, and we definitely like to uplift each other. I don't like a show where we're always talking about negative and bringing things down, because I look for solutions. It's always about the solutions that you find in every situation so that we can make things work. And I do need to share next week's guest. The producers giving me the message. But, you know, I have to get them to understand I have ADD and I cannot scroll through all of the stuff that I need to look for to get next week's guest. So can you put it up for me, Cheryl, and I will put the information out. And I know she got that. Because my team, I want to take this time out to say I have an incredible team that's helping out Launchpad Radio. And a big shout out to the Global Executive Media team. Growing and doing big things. That's the guest for next week is Miss Carmen Bryant. Oh, how could I forget Miss Carmen Bryant? Miss Carmen Bryant is going to be. Yeah, Carmen Bryant is going to be our guest next week. Just to give you a little snippet. A little snippet. I'm not even going to give you a little snippet. It's going to be the bomb show. And come see my guest, Carmen, next week. Carmen Bryant. She's a New York Times best-selling author for a book called It's No Secret. Go check it out. Go check out the book. And then come and meet my guest next Thursday, 9 to 11.
I will be here.
Right? And so with that, AM 1620, Eagle Radio Network, Global Executive Media is the website. You can find us at www.globalexecutivemedia.com. Your place for publishing, branding, marketing, and design. You can also check me out. I'm your personal GPS. You know, if you're looking to map yourself out, find out what your true passion is, a little bit of accountability, check me out, yourpersonalgps.com. We'll be back next week, next Thursday, 9 to 11, same place, same time. Hope to see you there.